hangman whose work Firefox was only too keen to take over. Dustfinger slipped past them, quick as a lizard. But all the same, one of them turned his way with a confused expression. Perhaps the smell of fire that Dustfinger wore like a second coat had risen to his nostrils. Chapter 61 In the Tower of the Castle of Night. Mo was asleep when they brought Maggie to him. It was only the fever that made him sleep, numbing the thoughts that kept him awake hour after hour, day after day, while he listened to his own heartbeat in the drafty cell where they had put him, high in one of the silver towers. The moon was still shining through the barred windows when the approaching footsteps roused him.
"Wake up, Blue Jay!"
The light of a torch fell into the cell, and Firefox pushed a slender figure through the door. Risa? What kind of dream was this? A good one for a change? But it was not his wife they had brought. It was his daughter. With difficulty, Mo sat up. He tasted Maggie's tears on his face as she hugged him so hard that he drew in his breath sharply with pain. Maggie? They had caught her, too.
Mo, say something.
She took his hand and looked at his face with concern.
How are you?
She whispered.
Well, fancy that, mocked Firefox. The Blue Jay really does have a daughter. I expect she's about to tell you she's here of her own free will as she tried to make the Adderhead believe. She's done a deal with him, and it's supposed to save your neck. You should have heard the fairy tales she told. You could always sell her and her angel's tongue to the strolling players.
Mo didn't even ask what he was talking about. He drew Maggie close as soon as the guard had bolted the door behind Firefox, kissed her hair, her forehead, took her face between his hands. He had been so sure that he'd seen that face for the last time in the stable in the forest.
"Maggie, for God's sake," he said,
leaning his back against the cold wall, since he could still hardly stand. He was so glad to see her there. So glad, and so dismayed, too.
"How did they catch you?"
"Never mind that. Everything will be all right, believe me."
She put her hand on his shirt where there was still dried blood on it.
"You looked so sick in the stable. I thought I'd never see you again."
"I thought the same when I found that letter on your pillow."
He stroked the tears off her lashes, as he had so often done before over the years. How tall she was. Hardly a child anymore, although he could still clearly see the child in her.
"Oh, heavens, it's so good to see you, Maggie. I know I shouldn't say so. A good father would say, 'Dear daughter, do you have to get yourself locked up every time I do?'"
She had a laugh, but he saw the concern in her eyes. She passed her fingers over his face as if she were finding shadows that hadn't been there before. Perhaps the white women had left their fingerprints behind, even though they hadn't taken him away with them.
"Don't look at me like that. I'm better, much better, and you know why."
He brushed the hair back from her forehead. It was so like her mother's. The thought of Risa hurt like a sharp thorn.
Those were powerful words. "Did Finolio write them for you?"
Maggie nodded.
"And he wrote more for me, too," she whispered in his ear. "Words that will save you. You and Risa and all the others."
Words. His whole life seemed to be woven from words. His life, and his death, too.
"They took your mother and the others to the dungeons under the castle."
He remembered Finolio's description only too well.
"The dungeons under the castle of night, where fear clung to the walls like mold, and no ray of sun ever warmed the black stones."
"Mo?"
Maggie put her hand on his shoulder.
"Do you think you can work?"
"Work? Why?"
He couldn't help smiling for the first time in a long, long while. "Do you think the Adderhead will forget he wants to hang me if I restore his books for him?" But he didn't once interrupt as she told him, in a low voice, Finolio's idea for rescuing him. He sat on the straw mattress where he had lain these last few days and nights, counting the notches carved in the walls by the other unfortunates, and listened to Maggie. And the more of the story she told, the crazier Finolio's plan seemed. But when she had finished, Mo shook his head and smiled.
Not a bad idea, he said quietly.
No, the old fox is no fool. He knows his story.
It's just a pity that Mortola presumably knows the altered version now, too, he added to himself, and that you were interrupted before you had read it to the end. As so often, Maggie seemed to see what he was thinking from his face. He saw it in her eyes. He stroked the bridge of her nose with his forefinger, as he always used to do when she was little. So little that her hand could hardly close around his finger. Little Maggie, big Maggie, brave Maggie.
You're so much braver than I am, he said,
bargaining with the adder head.
I'd really have liked to see that.
She put her arms around his neck and stroked his tired face. You will see it, Mo, she whispered. Finolio's words always come true, much more so in this world than in our own. They made you well again, didn't they? He just nodded. If he had said anything, she would have known from his voice that he found it difficult to believe, as she did, in a happy ending. Even when Maggie was younger, she had always known at once if he was troubled in some way, but then it had been easy to take her mind off it with a joke, a pun, a story. It wasn't so simple now. No one could see into Mo's heart as easily as Maggie, except her mother. Risa had the same way of looking at him.
I expect you heard why they dragged me here, haven't you? He asked. I'm supposed to be a famous robber.
Remember when we used to play Robin Hood? Maggie nodded. You always wanted to be Robin. And you wanted to be the Sheriff of Nottingham. The baddies are stronger, Mo, you kept telling me. Clever child. Do you know why they call me that? You'll like it. The Blue Jay. Maggie almost whispered the name.
Yes, exactly. What do you think?
I don't suppose there's much hope the real Blue Jay will come wanting his name back before my execution, do you?
How gravely she was looking at him, as if she knew something he didn't.
There isn't any other Blue Jay, Mo, she said quietly. You are him.
Without another word, she took his arm, turned up his sleeve, and let her finger trace the scar that Basta's dogs had left.
That wound was just healing when we were in Finolio's house. He gave you an ointment to help the scar tissue form better, remember? He didn't understand, not a word.
So?
You are the Blue Jay.
She repeated it.
No one else. Finolio wrote the songs about him. He made him up because he thought his world needed a robber, and he used you as his model. He was a noble robber in my imagination. That's what he wrote to me. It was some time before Mo's mind could take in the meaning of her words. Suddenly, he had to laugh. So loudly that the guard opened the barrel flap in the door and stared in suspiciously. Mo wiped the laugh off his face and stared back until the guard disappeared again, cursing. Then he leaned his head against the wall behind him and closed his eyes.
I'm sorry, Mo, whispered Maggie. So sorry. Sometimes Finolio is a terrible old man.
Well, yes.
Perhaps that's why Orpheus had found it so easy to read him here, because he was already in the story anyway.
What do you think? He asked. Do I feel honored? Or do I wring Finolio's old neck?
Maggie put her hand on his forehead. You're all hot. Lie down. You must rest.
How often had he said the same to her? How many nights had he spent sitting beside her bed? Measles, chickenpox, scarlet fever. Lord, Maggie, he had groaned when she caught a whooping cough too. Can't you leave out at least one childhood illness? The fever was pouring hot lead into his veins, and when Maggie bent over him, he thought for a moment that Risa was sitting beside him. But Maggie's hair was fairer.
Where are Dustfinger and Farid? They were with you, weren't they? Have they been captured, too?
The fever made his tongue heavy. No, I don't think so. Did you know Dustfinger has a wife?
Yes. It was because of her that Basta cut his face. Have you met her? Maggie nodded.
She's very beautiful. Farid is jealous of her.
Really? I thought he was in love with you. She went red, bright red. Maggie, Mo sat up. When on earth was this fever finally going to go anyway? It made him as weak as an old man. Oh, no, he said quietly. I see you've missed something. My daughter falls in love, and I fail to notice. One more reason to curse that damn book. You should have stayed with Farid. I'd have been all right.
No, you wouldn't. They'd have hanged you.
They may yet. The boy must be worried out of his mind about you now.
Poor fella. Has he kissed you?
Mo?
She turned her face away embarrassed, but she was smiling.
I have to know. I think I even have to give my permission, don't I?
Mo, stop it.
She nudged him in the ribs with her elbow as usual when he was teasing her, and was horrified to see his face twist with pain.
Oh, I'm sorry, she whispered.
Well, oh, so long as it hurts, I'm still alive.
The wind carried the sound of horses' hooves up to them. Weapons clashed and voices rang through the night.
I'll tell you what, said Mo quietly.
Let's play our old game. We'll imagine we're in another story. In Hobbiton, maybe. It's quite a peaceful place. We're with Wart and the wild geese. What do you think?
She did not reply for some time. Then she took his hand and whispered,
I'd like to imagine us in the Wayless Wood together, you and me and Risa. Then I could show you the fairies and the fire elves and the whispering trees and, no, wait, Balbulus's workshop, that's it. I'd like to be there with you. He's an illuminator, Mo, in the Castle of Sighs in Ombra. The best of all illuminators. You could see his brushes and pigments.
Suddenly she sounded so excited. She could still forget everything, like a child. She could forget the bolted door and the gallows in the courtyard. The mere thought of a couple of fine paintbrushes would do it.
Very well, said Mo, stroking her fair hair again. Anything you say. Let's imagine we're in the Castle of Ombra. I really would like to see those brushes.
Chapter 62. Where to? Farid was waiting by the statue as they had agreed. He had hidden behind it. Obviously, he still found it hard to believe that he was invisible, and he hadn't managed to get a sight of Maggie. Dustfinger could tell from his voice. It was husky with disappointment.
I got into the tower. I even saw the cell, but it's just too well guarded. And in the kitchen, they were saying she's a witch and she'd be killed along with her father.
Well, what else did you expect they'd be talking about?
Did you hear anything else? Yes, something about Firefox. They said he'll send Cosimo back to the dead.
Nothing about the Black Prince.
Only that there are people looking for him, but they haven't found him. They say he and his bear can exchange shapes, so that sometimes the bear is the prince, and the prince is the bear. And they say he can fly and make himself invisible, and that he's going to rescue the Blue Jay.
Really? Dustfinger laughed quietly. The prince will like that. Right, come on, it's time for us to be off.
Be off?
Dustfinger felt Farid's fingers clutching his arm.
Why? We could hide. The castle's so big no one would find us.
You think so? What would you do here anyway? Maggie wouldn't go with you even if you could magic her through locked doors. Have you forgotten the deal she was offering the Adderhead? Risa says it will take Silversong a few weeks to bind a book, and the Adderhead won't hurt a hair on his head or Maggie's until he has that book, will he? So come on. It's time we look for the prince. We must tell him about Sootbird.
Outside, it was still as dark as if morning would never come. This time they slipped through the castle gate together with a troop of men-at-arms. Dustfinger would have liked to know where they were going so late at night. Let's hope they're not hunting the prince, he thought, cursing Sootbird for his treacherous heart. The men-at-arms galloped off down the road leading away from Mount Adder into the mountains. Dustfinger standing there watching them go, when something furry suddenly jumped up at him. Taken by surprise, he stumbled into the structure of one of the gallows. 2 feet were swinging back and forth above him, but Gwyn clung to his arm as naturally as if his master had always been invisible.
damn it all.
His heart was in his mouth as he seized the marten.
You'll be the death of me yet, you little beast, won't you?
He hissed at him.
Where did you spring from?
As if in answer, Roxanne stepped out of the shadow of the castle walls.
Dustinger,
she whispered as her eyes searched for his invisible face. Jink appeared behind her and raised his nose, sniffling.
Yes, who do you think?
He guided her on with him, pressing her close to the wall so that the sentries on the battlements couldn't see her. This time he didn't ask why she had followed them. He was too glad she was there, even if the expression on her face reminded him for a moment of Risa and her sadness.
There's nothing we can do here for the moment, he whispered. But do you know that Sootbird is a welcome guest of the Castle of Night?
Sootbird?
Yes, Spad news. You ride back to Umbra and see to Jihan and Brianna, and I'll go look for the Black Prince and warm of this cuckoo in the nest.
And how are you going to find him? Roxanne smiled as if she could see his baffled face. Shall I take you to him?
You?
Yes.
Up above, the guards called something to one another. Dustfinger drew Roxanne even closer to the wall.
The prince cares for his motley folk very well, she whispered. And as I'm sure you can imagine, he doesn't always earn the money he needs for cripples and old folk, widows and orphans, by doing tricks in the marketplaces. His men are skillful poachers, and the terror of tax-gatherers. They have hiding places all over the forest, in Argenta and Lombrica alike, and there are often sick and wounded men there. Nettle will have nothing to do with robbers, nor will the moss women, and they don't trust most physicians. So some time ago they began coming to me. I'm not afraid of the forest. I've been in its darkest corners with you. Arrow wounds, broken bones, a bad cough. I know how to cure all those. And the prince trusts me. I was always Dustfinger's wife to him, even when I was married to another man. Perhaps he was right. Was he? Dustfinger spun around. Someone was clearing his throat in the darkness.
Didn't you say we must be gone before the sun rises?
Farid's voice sounded reproachful. By the fire and the fairies, he'd forgotten the boy. And Farid was right. Morning couldn't be far away, and the shadow of the Castle of Night was not the best place to discuss dead husbands.
Very well, catch the martens, Dustfinger whispered into the night. But don't, for heaven's sake, scare me to death like that again, understand? Or I'll never let you make yourself invisible again.
Chapter 63 The Badger's Earth. Farid followed Dustfinger and Roxanne through the night with an expression that must surely be as dark as the sky above them. It hurt to leave Maggie behind in the castle, however sensible it was. And now, here was Roxanne coming with them too, although he had to admit that she seemed to know exactly where she was going. They soon came upon the first hiding place, well concealed behind thorny undergrowth, but it was deserted. In the next, they found two men who distrustfully drew their knives and did not put them back in their belts until Roxanne had spoken to them at length. Perhaps they sensed the presence of Dustfinger and Farid in spite of their invisibility. Fortunately, Roxanne had once cured a nasty ulcer for one of them, and he finally told her where she could find the prince. The Badger's Earth. Farid thought he heard those words twice.
Their main hideout, was all that Roxanne said. We must be there by daybreak, but they warned me that there are said to be soldiers on the move, a great many of them.
From then on, Farid sometimes thought he heard the clink of swords in the distance, the snorting of horses, voices, marching footsteps, but perhaps he was only imagining it. Soon the first rays of sunlight penetrated the leaf canopy above them, gradually turning their bodies visible again, like reflections on dark water. It was good not to have to keep looking for his own hands and feet and to see Dustfinger again, even if he was walking beside Roxanne. Now and then, Farid sensed her looking at him, as if she were still searching his dark face for some similarity to Dustfinger. At her farm, she had once or twice asked him questions about his mother. Farid would have liked to have told her that his mother had been a princess, much, much more beautiful than Roxanne, and that Dustfinger had loved her so dearly that he stayed with her for 10 years until his death took her from him, leaving him only with their son, their dark-skinned, black-eyed son, who now followed him like a shadow. But his age wasn't quite right for this tale, and
Moreover, Dustfinger would probably have been furious if Roxanne had asked him for the truth behind it. So in the end, Fareed told her only that his mother was dead, which was probably correct. If Roxanne was stupid enough to think that Dustfinger had come back to her only because he had lost another woman, all the better. Every glance that Dustfinger cast her filled Fareed's heart to the brim with jealousy. Suppose he decided to stay with her forever, at the farm with the fragrant field of herbs. Suppose he stopped wanting to go from one marketplace to the next, but preferred to live with her, kissing her and laughing with her as he had already done only too often, forgetting Fire and Fareed. The forest became denser and denser, and the Castle of Night might have been only a bad dream when they suddenly saw over a dozen men standing among the trees around them, armed men in ragged clothes. They appeared so silently that even Dustfinger hadn't heard them. They surrounded them with hostile expressions on their faces, knives and swords in their hands, and stared at the two figures that were still almost transparent around the chests and arms.
"Hey, Snapper, don't you know me?"
asked Roxanne, going up to one of them.
"How are your fingers doing?"
The man's face cleared. He was a heavily built fellow with a scar on his neck.
"Ah, the herb witch," he said. "Of course. Why are you roaming the forest here so early? What are those ghosts with you?"
"We're not ghosts. We're looking for the Black Prince."
As Dustfinger moved to Roxanne's side, all the men's weapons turned his way.
"What are you doing?"
Roxanne asked the men angrily.
"Look at his face.
Did you never hear of the Fire Dancer? The prince will set his bear on you if he hears that you threatened him."
The men put their heads together and scrutinized Dustfinger's scarred face uneasily.
"Three scars as pale as cobwebs," whispered Snapper.
"Oh, yes. We've all heard about him, but only in songs."
"Who says songs can't be believed?"
Dustfinger breathed into the cool morning air and whispered fire words until a flame consumed his steaming breath. The robbers flinched back and stared at him, as if this only reinforced their certainty that he was a ghost. However, Dustfinger then raised both hands in the air and put the flame out between them as if nothing could be easier. Then he bent down and cooled the palms of his hands on the dewy grass.
"Did you see that?" Snapper looked at the others. "That's just what the prince has always told us about him. He catches fire as he might catch a rabbit. He speaks to it like a lover."
The robbers took the three into their midst. Fareed looked uneasily at the men's faces as he walked along beside them. They reminded him of other faces, faces from an earlier life, from a world that he did not like to remember, and he stayed as close as he could to Dustfinger's side.
"Are you sure that these are the prince's men?" Dustfinger asked Roxanne in an undertone.
"Oh, yes," she whispered back. "He can't choose who will follow him."
Fareed did not think this answer was very reassuring.
The robbers in Fareed's old life had claimed caves full of treasure as their own, caverns more magnificent than the halls of the Castle of Night. The hideout where Snapper took them could not be compared with those caves. Its entrance, hidden in a crevice in the ground among the tall beech trees, was so narrow that you had to squeeze your way in, and even Fareed had to duck his head in the passage beyond it. The cave it led to was not much better. Other passages branched off, obviously leading even deeper underground.
"Welcome to the Badger's Earth,"
said Snapper, while the men sitting on the floor of the cave looked at them suspiciously.
"Who says that only the Arrowhead can dig deep into the ground? There are several men among us who toiled in these mines for years. They found out how you can nest far down in the earth and not have it fall on your head."
The prince was alone in a cave to one side of the others. Only the bear was with him, and he looked tired. But at the sight of Dustfinger, his face brightened, and the news they brought was not so much of a surprise to him as they had expected.
Yes, Soot Bird," he said. And Snapper drew a finger across his throat at the mention of that name. "I ought to have asked myself much sooner how he could afford the alchemist's powders he uses in his fire-eating shows. The few coins he earns in marketplaces wouldn't pay for it. But unfortunately, I didn't have him watched until after the attack on the secret camp. He soon parted from the other prisoners we freed and met the Adderhead's informers on the border, while those he betrayed are in the dungeons of the Castle of Night, and there's nothing I can do for them. Here I am, stuck in a forest, swarming with soldiers. The Adderhead is assembling them up on the road that leads to Ombra.
Cosimo?
It was Roxanne who spoke the name, and the prince nodded. Yes. I sent you 3 messengers with 3 warnings. One came back, but only to say that Cosimo laughed in his face. I'll admit I don't remember him as being quite so stupid. The year he spent away seems to have robbed him of his reason. He's planning to make war on the Adderhead with an army of peasants. It's as if we were to march against the Adderhead ourselves.
We'd have a better chance, said Snapper.
Yes, I expect we would. The Black Prince sounded so discouraged that Farid's heart failed him. Secretly, he had always put far more trust in the prince than in Finolio's words. But what could this troop of ragged men digging themselves holes in the forests like rabbits do against the Castle of Night? The men brought them something to eat, and Roxanne looked at Dustfinger's leg. She treated the wound with an ointment that made it smell like spring in the cave for a moment, and Farid couldn't help thinking of Meggie. He remembered a story that he had heard by a fire on a cold night in the desert. It was the tale of a thief who fell in love with a princess. He still remembered it very well. The two were so deeply in love that they could speak to each other over a distance of many miles. Each could hear the other's thoughts, even if the walls separated them. Each knew whether the other was sad or happy. But as intently as Farid listened to his own feelings, he could sense nothing. He couldn't even have said whether Meggie was still alive. She seemed to have gone away from his heart, from the world. When he brushed the tears from his eyes, he felt Dustfinger looking at him.
I'll have to rest this wretched leg or it'll never heal, he said quietly. But we'll go back when the time comes.
Roxanne frowned, but she said nothing. The prince and Dustfinger began talking so quietly that Farid had to move close to them to make out anything. Roxanne put her head on Dustfinger's lap and was soon asleep. But Farid curled up like a puppy beside him, closed his eyes, and listened to the two men. The Black Prince wanted to know all about Silver Tongue, whether the day of the execution was fixed, where he was held prisoner, how his wound was doing. Dustfinger told him what he knew, and he told him about the book that Meggie had offered the Adderhead as a ransom for her father.
A book to hold Death prisoner? The prince laughed incredulously. Has the Adderhead taken to believing in fairy tales?
Dustfinger did not reply to that. He said nothing about Finolio. He did not say that they were all part of a story that an old man had written. In his place, Farid wouldn't have said so either. The Black Prince probably wouldn't believe that there were words that could decide even his own fate. Words like invisible paths from which he could not turn aside. The bear grunted in his sleep, and Roxanne turned her head restlessly. She was holding Dustfinger's hand as if she wanted to take him into her dreams.
You told the boy you'd go back, said the prince. You can come with us.
Are you going to the castle at night?
Why?
Do you plan to storm it with these few men?
Or tell the Adderhead that he's caught the wrong man? With this on your nose?
Dustfinger put his hand among the blankets lying on the floor and brought out a bird mask. Blue jay feathers sewn to cracked leather. He put the mask on his scarred face.
Many of us have worn that mask before, said the prince. And now they're going to hang another innocent man for the deeds we've done. I can't allow that. This time it's a bookbinder. Last time, after we attacked one of the silver transports, they hanged a charcoal burner just because he had a scar in his arm. His wife is probably still mourning him.
It's not just the deeds you did. Finolio invented most of them.
Dustfinger sounded irritated.
Damn it, Prince, you can't save Silvertongue. You'll only die too.
Or do you seriously think the Adderhead will let him go just because you've turned yourself in?
No, I'm not such a fool as that, but I must do something.
The prince put his hand in his bear's mouth, as he so often did. And as always that hand, as if miraculously, came back intact from between the bear's teeth.
Yes, yes, very well, Dustfinger sighed. You and your unwritten rules.
You don't even know Silvertongue. How can you want to die for someone you don't know?
Who would you die for? The prince asked in return. Farid saw Dustfinger look at Roxanne's sleeping face, and then turned to him. He quickly closed his eyes.
You'd die for Roxanne, he heard the prince say.
Perhaps, said Dustfinger. And through his lashes, Farid saw him trace Roxanne's dark brows with his finger.
Or perhaps not. Do you have many informers in the Castle of Night?
Yes, indeed. Kitchen maids, stable boys, even a few of the guards. Although they come very expensive. Most useful of all, a falconer who sends me a message now and then by one of his clever birds. I shall hear at once when they fix the day of the execution. You know the Adderhead doesn't have such things done in a marketplace, or in front of the common people in the castle courtyard anymore. Not since you spoiled my punishment so thoroughly for him. He was never a friend of such spectacles anyway. An execution is a serious matter to the Adderhead. The gallows outside the castle will do for a poor minstrel. There'll be no trouble about that. But the blue jay will die inside the gate.
Yes, if his daughter's voice doesn't open that gate for him, replied Dustfinger. Her voice and a book full of immortality.
Farid heard the Black Prince laugh. That sounds almost like some new song by the Inkweaver.
Yes, replied Dustfinger in a husky voice. That sounds just like him, doesn't it?
Chapter 64 All is Lost. After a few days' rest, Dustfinger's leg was much better, and Farid was just telling the two Martins how they'd soon all be stealing into the Castle of Night to rescue Maggie and her parents when bad news came to the Badger's Earth. One of the men who had been watching the road to Ombra brought it. His face was covered with blood, and he could hardly keep on his feet.
They're killing them!
He kept stammering over and over again.
They're killing them all!
Where? Asked the prince. Where exactly?
Not 2 hours from here,
the messenger managed to say.
Keep going north!
The prince left 10 men at the Badger's Earth. Roxanne tried to persuade Dustfinger to stay too.
You must spare your leg or it will never heal, she said. But he would not listen to her, so she too came on the fast, silent march through the forest. They heard the sound of battle long before they could see anything. Screams reached Farid's ears, cries of pain, and the whinnying of horses shrill with fear. A moment came when the prince signaled to them to go more slowly. A few more paces, bending low, and the ground in front of them dropped steeply to the road that ended many miles further on at the gates of Ombra. Dustfinger made Farid and Roxanne get down on the ground, although no one was looking their way. Hundreds of men were fighting among the trees down below, but there were no robbers among them. Robbers did not wear shirts of chainmail, breastplates, and helmets decked with peacock feathers. They seldom have horses, and never coats of arms embroidered on silken surcoats. Dustfinger held Roxanne close when she began to sob. The sun was sinking behind the hills as the Adderhead soldiers cut down Cosimo's men, one by one. It looked as if the battle had been raging for a long time. The road was covered with dead bodies lying side by side. Only a small troop was still on horseback amidst all this death. Cosimo himself was among them, his beautiful face distorted by rage and fear. For a moment, it looked almost as if those few mounted men would be able to carve themselves a breach in the enemy ranks. But then Firefox came among them with a company of men gleaming like deadly beetles in their armor. They mowed down Cosimo and his retinue like dry grass as the sun sank right behind the hills, as red as if all the blood that had been shed was reflected in the sky. Firefox himself struck Cosimo from his horse, and Dustfinger buried his face in Roxanne's hair, as if he were tired of seeing death at work. But Farid did not turn his head away. His face unmoving, he looked at the slaughter and thought of Maggie. Maggie, who perhaps still believed that a little ink could cure anything in this world. Would she believe it if her eyes saw what his were seeing now? Few of Cosimo's men survived the prince. Barely a dozen fled into the trees.
no one went to the trouble of pursuing them. The Adderhead soldiers broke into cries of triumph and began plundering the corpses like a flock of vultures in human form. They did not get Cosimo's body, however. Firefox himself drove his soldiers off and had that beautiful corpse loaded onto a horse and taken away.
"Why are they doing that?" asked Farid.
"Why?"
"Because his corpse is the proof that he really is dead this time," said Dustfinger bitterly.
"Yes, he is indeed," whispered the Black Prince. "I suppose you think yourself immortal if you've come back from the dead once. But he wasn't, any more than his men. And now almost all the people of Lomraca will be widows and orphans." It was many hours before the Adderhead soldiers finally moved away, laden with what they could rob from the dead. Darkness was coming on again when silence fell at last among the trees, the silence that is felt only in the presence of death. Roxanne was the first to find a way down the slope. She was no longer weeping. Her face was fixed and rigid, but whether with anger or pain, Farid could not have said. The robbers hesitated before following her, for the first white women were already standing there among the dead. Chapter 65 Lord of the Story. Fenolia was wandering among the dead when the robbers found him. Night fell, but he did not know what night it was, nor could he remember how many days had passed since he rode out of the gates of Ombra with Cosimo. He knew only one thing. They were all dead. Minerva's husband, his neighbor, the father of the boy who had so often begged him for a story, all dead. And he himself would very likely have been dead too, if his horse hadn't shied and thrown him. He had crawled away into the trees to hide there like an animal and watch the slaughter. Since the departure of the Adderhead soldiers, he had been stumbling from one corpse to the next, cursing himself, cursing his story, cursing the world he had created. When he felt the hand on his shoulder, he actually thought for a moment that Cosimo had risen from the dead yet again. But it was the Black Prince standing behind him.
"What are you doing here?"
he snarled at him and the men with him.
"Do you want to die too? Go away and hide and leave me in peace."
He struck his brow. His damned head that had invented them all, and with them all the misfortune they were wading through like black stinking water. He fell on his knees beside a dead man whose open eyes were staring at the sky, and blamed himself furiously. Himself, the Adderhead, Cosimo and his haste, and then suddenly fell silent when he saw Dustfinger standing next to the prince.
"You!" he stammered and got to his feet again, swaying. "You're still alive. You're not dead yet, even though I wrote it that way."
He took Dustfinger's arm and clutched it tightly.
"Yes, it's disappointing, isn't it?" replied Dustfinger, shaking off Fenelio's hand roughly.
"Is it any comfort to you that no doubt but for Farid, I'd have been lying as dead and cold as these men? After all, you didn't foresee him."
"Farid? Oh, yes, the boy plucked by Mortimer from his desert story." He was standing beside Dustfinger and staring at Fenolia with murder in his eyes. No, the boy really did not belong here. Whoever had sent him to protect Dustfinger, it hadn't been him, Fenolio. But that was the wretched part of this whole business. With everyone interfering in his story, how could it turn out well?
"I can't find Cosimo," he muttered. "I've been looking for him for hours. Have any of you seen him?"
"Firefox had his body taken away," the prince replied. "I expect they'll put it on public display so that this time no one can claim he's still alive." Fenolio stared at him until the bear began to growl. Then he shook his head again and again.
"I don't understand it," he stammered. "How could it happen? Maggie didn't read what I wrote for her? Didn't Roxanne find her?"
He looked despairingly at Dustfinger. How well he remembered the day he had described his death. A good scene, one of the best he'd ever written.
"Oh, yes. Roxanne gave Maggie the letter. Ask her yourself if you don't believe me. although I don't think she'll feel much like talking at the moment.
Dustfinger pointed to the woman walking among the corpses. Roxanne. The beautiful Roxanne. She bent over the dead, looked into their faces, and finally kneeled down beside a man whom a white woman was approaching. She quickly put her hands over his ears, bent over his face, and gestured to the two robbers who were following her with torches in their hands. No, she would certainly not feel much like talking just now. Dustfinger looked at him. Why that reproachful expression? Fenelia wanted to snap at him. After all, I invented your wife, too. But he bit back the words.
Very well. So Roxanne gave Maggie the letter, he said instead. But did Maggie read it?
Dustfinger looked at him with great dislike. She tried to, but the Adderhead had her taken to the Castle of Night that very evening.
Oh, God, Fenelia looked around.
The dead faces of Cosimo's men stared at him.
So that's it, he cried. I thought this all happened only because Cosimo wanted to set off too soon, but no. The words, my wonderful words, Maggie can't have read them or everything would have been all right. Nothing would have been all right.
Dustfinger's voice was so cutting that Fenelio involuntarily flinched.
No, a man of all these lying here would be dead if you hadn't brought Cosimo back.
The prince and his men stared at Dustfinger, unable to make anything of this. Of course, they had no idea what he was talking about. But obviously, Dustfinger knew only too well. Maggie had told him about Cosimo. Or had it been the boy?
Why are you staring at him like that? Farid challenged the robbers, ranging himself at Dustfinger's side. It was exactly as he says. Fenelio brought Cosimo back from the dead. I was there myself.
How the fools flinched away. Only the Black Prince looked thoughtfully at Fenelio.
What nonsense, Fenelio said. No one comes back to this world from the dead. Think what a crowd there'd be. I made a new Cosimo, a brand new one, and everything would have turned out well if Maggie hadn't been interrupted while she read. My Cosimo would have been a wonderful ruler.
Before he could say any more, the prince's black hand came down over his mouth.
That's enough, he said. Enough talking while the dead lie here around us. Your Cosimo is dead wherever he came from, and the man they take for the Blue Jay because of your songs may well be dead soon, too. You seem to enjoy playing with death, Inkweaver.
Fenelio tried to protest, but the Black Prince had already turned to his men.
Go on looking for the wounded, he told them, and hurry. It's time we got off this road.
They found barely 2 dozen survivors. 2 dozen among hundreds of dead. When the robbers set off again with the wounded men, Fenelio staggered after them in silence without asking where they were going.
The old man is following us. He heard Dustfinger tell the prince. Where else would he go? Was all the prince replied, and Dustfinger said nothing.
But he kept well away from Fenelio, as if he were death itself. Chapter 66 Blank Paper. When Mortola had Moe's cell unlocked, Maggie was just telling him about the Laughing Prince's festivities, the tightrope walker and the Black Prince and Farid's juggling with the torches. Moe put his arm protectively around her as the bolts outside were shot back and Mortola came into the cell, flanked by Basta and the Piper. The sunlight falling into the room made Basta's face look like boiled lobster.
Look at that. What an idol. Father and daughter reunited, sneered Mortola. Truly touching.
Hurry up, the guard told her through the door in low voice. If the Adderhead sees that I let you in to see them, they'll put me in the pillory for 3 days.
And if they do, I've paid you well enough, haven't I?
Was all Mortola replied, while Basta went up to Moe with a vicious smile.
Well, Silver Tongue, he purred. Didn't I say you'd all fall into our trap yet?
You look more as if it was you who fell into Dustfinger's trap, replied Moe, quickly putting Maggie behind him when, by way of answer, Basta snapped open his knife. Basta, stop that! Mortola snapped at him. We don't have time for your games!
Maggie came out from behind Mo's back as Mortola moved toward her. She wanted to show the old woman that she wasn't afraid of her. Even if, of course, that was only a brave lie.
Those were interesting words that you had hidden in your clothing, Mortola said to her, low-voiced. The other head was particularly interested in the part about the three very special words. Oh, see how pale she's gone around her pretty little nose. Yes, the Etherhead knows about your plans, little pigeon. And he knows now that Mortola isn't as stupid as he thought. But unfortunately, he still wants the book he promised him. The fool really does believe that you two can keep his death imprisoned in a book.
The magpie wrinkled her nose at such princely stupidity and came yet closer to Maggie.
Yes, he's a gullible fool, like all princes, she whispered to Maggie. We both know that, don't we? For the words you carried with you also say that Cosimo the Fair will conquer this castle and kill the Etherhead, with the aid of the book your father is to bind for him. But how can that be so? Cosimo is dead, and for good this time. Oh, how alarmed you look, you little witch.
Her bony fingers pinched Maggie's cheeks hard. Mo went to strike her hand away, but Basta faced him with the knife.
Your tongue has lost its magic power, my little darling, said the magpie. The words are only words. The book your father is to bind for the Etherhead will be nothing but a blank book. And once the Silver Prince finally realizes that, nothing will save you two from the hangman. And Mortola will be avenged at last.
Leave her alone, Mortola. Mo reached for Maggie's hand in spite of Basta's knife, and Maggie clasped his fingers firmly in hers as thoughts raced through her mind in confusion. Cosimo was dead? For the second time? What did that mean? Nothing, she thought. Nothing at all, Maggie, because you never read the words that were to protect him. Mortola seemed to notice her relief, for the magpie's eyes became as narrow as her lips.
Ah, so that doesn't trouble you. Do you think I'd lie to you? Or do you believe in that book of immortality yourself? Let me tell you something.
The magpie's thin fingers dug into Maggie's shoulder.
It's a book. No more. And I'm sure you and your father remember what my son used to do with books. Capricorn would never have been fool enough to entrust his life to one, even if you promised him immortality for it. And furthermore, those three words that it seems must not be written in the book, I know them now, too.
What do you mean by that, Mortola? Asked Mo quietly. Do you by any chance dream of putting Basta here on the Adderhead's throne? Or even yourself? The magpie cast a quick glance at the guard outside the cell door, but he had his back to them, and she turned to Mo again, her face expressionless.
Whatever I intend to do, Silvertongue, she hissed at him, you won't live to see it. This story is over for you. Why isn't he in chains? She snapped at the piper. He's still a prisoner, isn't he? At least tie his hands while you move him.
Maggie was about to protest, but Mo cast her a warning glance.
Believe me, Silvertongue,
said Mortola in a low voice as the piper roughly tied Mo's hands behind his back.
Even if the Etherhead sets you free after you've made him his book, you won't get far. And Mortola's word is worth more than the words of a poet. Take the pair of them to the old chamber,
she ordered as she went to the door again.
But watch them closely, and make sure that not a single book falls into their hands.
The old chamber lay in the most remote part of the castle of night, far from the halls where the Adderhead held court. The corridors down which Basta and the piper led them were dusty and deserted. No silver adorned the columns and doors here. There was no glass in the drafty windows. The room whose door the piper finally opened with a mocking bow to Mo seemed to have been unoccupied for a long time. The pink fabric of the bed hangings was moth-eaten. The bunches of flowers standing in pitchers in the window niches were long dried up. Dust was caught in the withered blossoms, and lay thick and dirty white on the chests that stood under the windows. In the middle of the chamber there was a table, a long wooden surface laid on trestles. A man stood behind it, as pale as paper, with white hair and ink stains on his fingers. He gave Maggie only a quick glance, but he studied Mo as thoroughly as if someone had asked him to deliver an expert opinion on him.
"Is this the man?"
he asked the piper.
"He looks as if he'd never held a book in his hand in his life, let alone had the faintest idea how to bind one."
Maggie saw a smile steal over Mo's face. Without a word, he went over to the table and examined the tools lying on it.
"My name is Taddeo, and I am the librarian here,"
went on the stranger, sounding annoyed.
"I don't suppose that a single one of these objects means anything to you, but I can assure you that the paper you see there alone is worth more than your wretched robber's life. The finest product of the best paper mill for 1,000 miles around, enough to bind more than 2 books of 500 pages. Although a genuine bookbinder, of course, would prefer parchment to any paper, however good."
Mo held out his bound hands to the piper. "There could be two opinions about that," he said as the silver-nosed minstrel, his expression sullen, undid his bonds. "You should be glad I asked for paper. Parchment for this book would cost a fortune, quite apart from the hundreds of goats that would have to give their lives for it. And as for the quality of these sheets, it's by no means as good as you claim. The texture is coarse. But if there's no better available, it will have to do. I hope at least it's well-sized. As for the rest of this," Mo's expert fingers passed over the tools lying ready, "it looks serviceable. Knives and bone folders, hemp, strong thread and needles to stitch the pages, glue in a pot to heat it in, beechwood for the back and front covers, leather to go over them. Mo picked them all up, as he did in his own workshop, before he set to work. Then he looked around. "What about the press and the sewing frame? And what am I going to heat the glue with?"
You'll have everything you need before evening,"
replied Taddeo with some confusion. "The clasps are all right, but I need another file, and leather, and linen for the tapes."
"Of course, of course. Anything you say."
The librarian nodded, very ready to oblige now, while an incredulous smile spread over his pale face. "Good." Mo leaned on the table, supporting himself with both hands. "Sorry, but I'm not very strong on my legs yet. I hope the leather is more flexible than the parchment. And as for the glue," he added, picking up the pot and sniffing, "well, we'll see if it's good enough. And bring me some paste, too. I'll use only glue for the covers. Bookworms like the flavor too much." Maggie relished the sight of the surprised faces. Even the piper was staring at Mo in disbelief. Only Basta remained unmoved. He knew that he had brought the librarian a bookbinder, not a robber.
"My father needs a chair," said Maggie with an imperious glance at the librarian. "Can't you see he's injured? Is he supposed to work standing up?"
"Standing up? No. No, of course not. By no means. I'll have an armchair brought at once,"
answered the librarian distractedly. He was still staring at Mo.
You know a remarkable amount about books for a highwayman."
Mo gave him a smile. "Yes. Don't I?" he said. "Perhaps the highwayman was once a bookbinder. Don't they say that all kinds of professions are to be found among the outlaws? Farmers, cobblers, physicians, minstrels?"
"Never mind what he once was,"
the piper interrupted.
"He's a murderer anyway, so don't fall for his soft-voiced bookworm. He kills without batting an eyelid. Ask Basta if you don't believe me."
"Yes, very true." Basta rubbed his burned skin. "He's more dangerous than a nest of vipers, and his daughter's no better. I hope those knives don't give you any silly ideas.
he said to Mo. The guard will be counting them regularly, and they'll cut off one of your daughter's fingers for every knife that goes missing. And the same applies to any other stupid tricks you try. Do you understand?
Mo did not answer him, but he looked at the knives as if to count them for safety's sake.
Oh, do get him a chair, said Maggie to the librarian impatiently as Mo leaned on the table again.
Yes, of course, at once.
Tadeo hurried away, but the piper gave an ugly laugh.
Listen to that little witch, ordering people around like a prince's brat. Well, not surprising, is it, since she claims to be the daughter of a man who can keep death a prisoner between two wooden covers? What about you, Basta? Do you believe her story?
Basta put his hand to the amulet hanging around his neck. It was not a rabbit's paw, as he had worn in Capricorn service, but something that looked suspiciously like a human finger bone.
Who knows? He muttered.
Yes. Who knows? Agreed Mo, without turning to look at the two of them. But I can summon death anyway, can't I, Basta? So can Maggie. The piper cast Basta a swift glance. Basta had pale blotches on his burned skin. All I know, he growled, his hand still on his amulet, is that you should have been dead and buried long ago, Silver Tongue, and the other head would do better to listen to Mortola instead of your witchy daughter. He ate out of her hand, did the Silver Prince. He fell for her lies. The piper straightened his back, as ready to attack as the viper on his master's coat of arms.
"Fell for her lies,"
he said in his curiously strained voice. He was a good head taller than Basta.
"The outer head falls for nothing, anyone says. He is a great ruler, greater than any other. Firefox sometimes forgets that, and so does Mortola. Don't go making the same mistake, and now get out. The outer head's orders are that no one who ever worked for Capricorn is to be on guard in this room. Could that mean that he doesn't trust you?"
Basta's voice turned to a hiss.
"You worked for Capricorn once yourself, Piper," he said through compressed lips. "You'd be nothing but for him."
"Oh, yes? You seen this nose?"
The piper stroked his silver nose.
"I once had a nose like yours, an ordinary nose of flesh and blood. It hurt losing it, but the adder head had a better one made for me, and since then I don't sing for drunken fire-raisers. I sing only for him, a real prince whose family is older than the towers of this castle. If you don't want to serve him, then go back to Capricorn's fortress. Maybe his ghost is haunting those burned-out walls. Oh, but you're afraid of ghosts, aren't you, Basta?"
The two men were standing so close that the blade of Basta's knife wouldn't have fitted between them.
"Yes, I am afraid of ghosts," he hissed. "But at least I don't spend every night on my knees whimpering because I'm afraid the white women might fetch me away like your fine new master."
The piper struck Basta in the face so hard that his head hit the doorframe. Blood ran down his burned cheek in a trail of red. He wiped it away with the back of his hand.
"Take care to avoid dark corridors, Piper," he whispered. "You don't have a nose any more, but one can always find something else to cut off."
When the librarian came back with the chair, Basta had gone. And the piper left too, after posting two guards outside the door.
"No one comes in or goes out except the librarian,"
Maggie heard him ordering brusquely before he left.
"And check up regularly to make sure the Blue Jay is working."
Tadeo smiled awkwardly at Mo as the piper's footsteps died away outside, as if he felt he should apologize for the soldiers guarding the door.
"Excuse me,"
he said quietly, placing the chair at the table for him.
"But I have a few books that are showing strange signs of damage. Could you maybe take a look at them?"
Maggie had to suppress a smile, but Mo acted as if the librarian had asked him the most natural question in the world. "Of course," he said. Tadeo nodded and glanced at the door.
One of the guards was pacing up and down outside, looking sullen.
"But Mortola mustn't know, so I'll come back when it's dark," he whispered to Mo. "Luckily, she goes to bed early. There are wonderful books in this castle, but sad to say, no one here can